All right. Are you ready to talk about parenting? Oh, I don't know. I don't know if we're ready for that or not. Well, y'all know me, but you may not know. I mean, some of you may not know. This is my wife, Carlin.
Hello.
I paused long enough to see if I could get a smattering of applause for you. So I did.
They did it.
That's good. Yeah.
Very kind.
So, we're parents, are we not?
We are parents.
Why don't you tell them about
that? We are parents. Well, we've been married for 25 years.
Wow, 26 and, this year.
Yeah, 26 in a month. And we were married for 10 years and went through a long season of infertility before God chose to make us parents. So we have quite a story there. But our three children, our three gifts from God that we weren't sure we would ever have, are 15. Matthew's 15 and a freshman. John is 13 and he's in eighth grade, middle school. And Stephanie is 9 and in elementary school. So three schools, three start times, three end times, three ministries at church. It's a fun year.
Yeah. So Carlin is a teacher by education. She actually taught in the public school district for 10 years. And did some homeschooling for a while of our kids when they were younger. And now our kids are back in the public school. But we certainly want to encourage you in this task. And I know it's an ominous task. And we got a table out there every Sunday for a thing called Partners, our discipleship program. And sometimes I try to push people toward that. And I tell them, you know, you go through this and then you have to take somebody through this. And they hear that and they go, wow, that's scary. I don't know if that's for me. I don't know if I can guide and direct someone's spiritual life. That's such a big responsibility. And I think to myself, you know, parenting is that times 100, is it not? I mean,
yes.
You are, whether you like it or not, the primary disciplers for your kids. God has entrusted to you young lives that you're supposed to shape spiritually, intellectually, socially, physically. Your job is a huge, big task. And so what we want to do for the next 3 weeks is talk about that task using a very simple biblical breakdown. So if you have your Bibles, turn to Ephesians chapter 6 real quick, just to get your eyeballs on this text. And your kids, if they happen to be in Awana, what providence is this, are actually memorizing Ephesians 6:1 and hopefully did it and
Cubbies
rehearsed it on the car
tonight.
In the car on the way here. Did they not? Did our daughter?
No, the Cubbies. I saw the Cubbies going by memorizing this verse tonight.
That's right. Yeah. I actually talked to the guys up here. Did your kid know the verse? Bam. Slammed it out.
That's awesome.
Ephesians 6:1. And you know, a lot of little kids freeze when the pastor asks them to recite a verse. But
good job.
Little guys did not do that. So that was awesome. Ephesians 6:1. You got it there? Look at it. Verse 1. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Now he quotes Exodus 30. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and you may live long in the land. Fathers. Not that mothers are not involved in this, but dads, this is a great, I could go off on this for a long time. Dads have to take a primary role in this. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. Look up here on the overhead, if you would. There's the verse again. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but here's two key words. It says, but bring them up in the discipline and in the instruction of the Lord. That first word, discipline, that is translated discipline, is a word that you could translate to chasten. That's a harsh word, but it's what it means. To spank would be another way to translate that word. To reprove, which is what's happening when you're chastening or spanking a child, that sense of correction there. And that's the word we're going to use as the banner over this particular aspect of parenting. You have to correct. And then that next word, instruction, and maybe you've been around the block in the Christian life for a while, you've heard of nouthetic counseling. That's this word, nouthesetai. That word right there is translated instruction. It can also be translated to admonish. That's strong words to put you on the right path. To exhort, that sense of coming alongside and directing your path, or even just to prompt, to get you going, get you moving in the right direction. So those are two great aspects to parenting, and we like to call it correcting and directing. And if you've ever had your kids dedicated up here on the stage, I probably say that every time, every service. Anytime we get kids up here, we talk to the parents and say it's your job to correct and direct, to bring them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. Now, as we'll talk about, we're going to go through stages of life, and I don't know what your percentages would be on this, Carlin, but I mean, certainly the younger they are, the more correcting you do, right? And the older they are, right, the more directing you do.
Yeah.
And so there's that sense in which there's a trade-off. So tonight what we're going to talk about is the aspect of correction. But when we talk about correction, you need to understand that, most of the kinds of, I mean, we obviously have to correct our 16 and 17-year-olds, but we have to do the kind of correction that the Bible talks a lot about in Proverbs to the youngest children. So we're gonna share some of our wisdom on that. And you should know this. We're going to talk about, for the first, I don't know, half of this, 30% of it, we're going to talk about what the Bible says in terms of principle. And one of the reasons I want my wife here is then to discuss for the remainder of the time how we have put that into practice. And don't get us wrong on this. We are not trying to say, hey, the way we applied it, that's the way you have to apply it. Your parenting management style may be a little bit differently, but we can't fudge on the principles, right? And I know everybody's looking for a technique. They're looking for a program, looking for a template, looking for all these things. And in churches, it's thrived like, you know, mold and mildew, these programs that try to tell you exactly how to do it, exactly how to feed them, and exactly how to put them to bed, and exactly how to get them educated on this or that. We're not here to do that. We're here to give you the principles and then share enough of our own personal parenting examples to show you how we've applied it. So make sure you make that distinction in your mind, the difference between the truth of God's Word and the principles of God's Word, and then how we put it into practice in the 21st century. So let's talk a little bit about the problem real quick. You don't need to turn to these texts, but here's a passage that we read not long ago in our daily Bible reading. How long ago was that?
A couple weeks.
A little while ago.
Yeah, a couple weeks.
Samuel gets the old call in the middle of the night. Remember that? Samuel, Samuel. And we always teach our kids that little flannel graph story. And he's sleeping there by the ark. And all of that's interesting and fun. And it's a neat story about a little boy. And we always tell it in Sunday school. But if you don't remember what the point of God going to all the trouble when there were no visions in Israel and there were no direct voices, there was no direct revelation going on. It was rare in that day, the Bible says. So God breaks through into time and space to give one basic message. Do you remember what it was? Here's what it was. He says, I'm going to do something in Israel that will make everybody's ears tingle, a little Hebrew idiom. Everybody's going to go, wow. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to punish Eli, the priest. I'm going to punish his household because he did not, keyword, restrain his children. He didn't restrain them. The pastor's kid, if you will, was not restrained, or kids in this case. They were doing wrong, and you didn't stop them. You didn't correct them. You didn't curtail them. A little sub point here. I cannot control whether or not my kids are elect. I can't do that, right? But as a pastor, I am not even qualified to be a pastor, as God told Samuel about Eli's family, unless my kids are restrained, right, from being known as people who do evil. So I am responsible, and God sees it as entirely possible for me to restrain them and keep them from going headlong into sin and doing whatever they want. The sad thing about the story is that in 1 Samuel chapter 8, we've come here to the end of Saul's reign, or at least it's winding down and things aren't going. I'm sorry. We're getting to the end of Eli's family and the theocracy, and we're about to get into the monarchy when we have Saul as the king, and the people are looking for leadership. And the Bible says that Samuel appointed his two sons to go out there, Abijah and Joel, those were his kids' names, to go out there and lead in the land. And the people said, you know what? We don't want them. As a matter of fact, the Bible says it first. The narrative from God says they did not walk in the ways of Samuel. So Samuel brings the message that Eli's kids are out of control and unrestrained. And then it says, hey, you know, five chapters later, Samuel, same problem with you. Your kids are going headlong after gain. They're greedy. They're not about truth. They're taking bribes and perverting justice. Mm-hmm. Think about that now. So even in the good guy's household, we'd see Eli as a bad guy, you know, compromised guy. Samuel was the paragon of godliness, and he didn't restrain his own children from doing the wrong things. interesting if you put all these passages together. If you're note taking, you can look these all up later. 2 Samuel 7. We have Saul as the first king. We have David come along as the next king. Most of, you know, the end of 1 Samuel and the beginning of 2 Samuel, all about David, right? By the time we get to chapter 7, God gives him a promise. We call it the Davidic covenant. There's a promise that God makes to David, and he says, I'm going to ultimately create a king out of your line that will be the King of Kings. The Lord Jesus Christ is going to come from David's line. But he says, you're going to have a son. And here's what he says. I'll just read it for you. He says, and I will be a father to him, and he shall be a son to me. And when he commits iniquity, I will discipline him. Mm-hmm. Right? Oh, that is so telling in light of the problem with Eli when God was trying to lead the people through the priesthood, and the problem with Samuel when he was leading the people through the prophet, right? And now we had a king that went left, and now all of a sudden we got, I don't mean politically left, I mean he goes left turn, he goes into sin. It's a different message. What we have, though, is God saying, listen, there's a lot of bad parenting going on here. I'm going to take up the mantle for your son, and I'm going to discipline him. That's what was lacking in 1 Samuel, and even in the beginning of 2 Samuel, the problem of the lack of restraining evil. So that's a great little study for you to do sometime through the books of 1 and 2 Samuel. Let's think a little bit about the model of discipline in the Bible. God, you need to know, is a disciplinarian. Look what he says. My son, do not despise the Lord's discipline, the writer of Proverbs says, which is Solomon, who was the son that was talked about in 2 Samuel chapter 7. He says, don't despise it, and don't be weary of his reproof. The Lord reproves those whom he loves, check this out now, as a father, the son in whom he delights, which is kind of a slam on Eli and Samuel as well. Apparently you didn't love your kids enough because you didn't discipline them. A couple things you note here. God is a disciplinarian. He disciplines his people, right? And here we see he does it because he loves them. And then he puts it against the backdrop of good parents. If you're a loving parent, then you discipline your children. You restrain them. You correct them. You keep them from going headlong into sin. And even when we think the sin is so cute, when they're so young and so small, God is a disciplinarian. A couple things about that. Let's think that through. You live in the corporal world, the physical world. You're a sentient being. You know what I mean by that? We live in a place that has real problems that are dangerous, and because God doesn't want us to be exposed to the harm of those things, he creates pain in our physical bodies. That means we're sentient creatures. We have feelings, and when something is harmful to us, they hurt, and he uses that pain to keep us from continuing headlong into that problem, that damaging thing. In this case, he uses an example. A man, can he carry fire? Can he carry fire next to his chest and his clothes not be burned? Can't do that. It's impossible. You carry fire, you're going to get burnt. How about this? Can one walk on hot coals and his feet not get scorched? Well, God doesn't want the heat of the coals against our feet. That's bad for our feet. So he causes pain, and that makes you stop. And then he says, here's something that doesn't hurt. Right? Sex with your neighbor's wife doesn't hurt, feels good. That's why people do it. But he says this, so is he who goes into his neighbor's wife, right? He says, anyone who touches her will not go unpunished. God now inflicts people with some kind of moral pain and some kind of moral consequence and some kind of physical consequence oftentimes so that they will be restrained from moral sin. The equation there is so helpful. That's the point of restraining our kids. We want to keep our kids from doing something that is ultimately damaging to them. God is a disciplinarian in the physical world, right? He's also in the moral world a disciplinarian. He puts consequences that are painful to those things that he deems harmful. And so it is also that we are to reflect that. Let's keep going here. If the motive is love, let's think that one through. Think of how he posits this. Here's the problem with sin. Because they hated knowledge and did not choose to fear the Lord, speaking here in Proverbs 1:29, it says, they would have none of my counsel, they despise my reproof, therefore they shall eat the fruit of their ways and have their fill of their own devices. They're going to get all that they get from doing wrong. The consequences will come, like the adultery will be discovered and the husband will come after you with a shotgun or a slingshot or a spear. Right? There's going to be problems for you. For the simple, they're killed by their turning away, right? And the complacency of fools destroys them. But here's the love part. Whoever listens to me, right, will dwell secure and will be at ease without dread of disaster. That's what I want for you. I want a good life for you. I want you to be at ease. I want you to dwell securely. I want what's good for you. Therefore, right, I will impose pain in your life to keep you from going down the path that ultimately is damaging. Just remember the physical correlation, right? That God inflicts pain to keep us from doing things that are physically harmful. God then also, as a dad to us, will inflict pain to keep us from moral harm, right? And that's the pattern in the Bible, particularly through Proverbs, of us as parents. Loving parents discipline their kids. And here are some very direct statements about us disciplining our children. Discipline your son, for there is hope. I know some days it feels like there is no hope. They're perpetually sinners. They always will be. They'll never obey. Do we have any kids like that?
No. No kids like that. No, just kidding. Yes. Yes.
I mean, we were just talking
we
about
We actually
that.
Have one kid that very much we, at times, felt like losing hope. But
no, there was all, they were all sinners.
They were all
but
sinners.
But one of us tried to prove that every hour when they were young. Right?
Yes. Yes, we have one like that. He I mean, even does it as a teenager. It's interesting.
Yes,
still gets more
yes.
than the others do.
And we won't tell you
which one he is.
What his name is.
It might slip out at some point later, though.
Oh, it will. You can figure it out. discipline your son, for there is hope. Do not set your heart on putting him to death. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, he's so bad you're going to go over there and you're going to kill him. No, matter of fact, the point is, if you discipline him, then there's hope in that, right? And if you don't, your passivity is actively putting him to death.
Mm.
Keep going here. This will help prove the point. Very simply, the wages of sin is death, right? If I sin, there are consequences. Moral sin, consequences from heaven, from God. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever one sows, that he'll also reap. If I discipline my kids, right, there's hope in that, that he won't die. If I don't discipline my children, if I do not restrain, if I do not correct, if I do not reprove, if I do not chastise, if I do not spank, to use those words from Ephesians 6, see, then I am really being someone who is allowing actively, though it's a very passive thing, I'm allowing him to die in some way. I mean, death comes in a variety of levels and forms. Loving parents discipline their kids just to drive this a little further and just to get to a word that's always upsetting to people. Proverbs 23, 13 and 14. Do not withhold discipline from a child. Now, this is God's word. You are not to withhold it for all the reasons that your, you know, freshman psychologist told you to withhold it, or for whatever your mother-in-law says, or for whatever your little bleeding heart wants to do to withhold it. You cannot withhold discipline from a child, right? If you strike him with a rod, right, he will not die. Right? What does that mean? Go back to the passages before. That means you're going to restrain him from going down a path that will lead to his destruction. Or let's just keep reading with the Hebrew parallelism here. If you strike him with the rod, right, you'll save his soul from Sheol. Parallel statement, the concept of death, the corruption of what happens in terms of punishment and retribution in the afterlife, that's all bound up with the word Sheol. Shebet, you see the word next to it there that I've transliterated for you in English? Shebet, that's the Hebrew word. Rod is a very unfortunate translation, right? Because when you picture a rod, if you're anything like me, I picture a metal piece of rebar, right, that you put in concrete. So when I picture that, now I picture Child Protective Services running over to my house, right? That is not the idea of rod. The shebet is used in three different ways in the Bible. Let me give them to you right now, and this will be helpful. You know this from Psalm 23, right? Talk about the Lord is my shepherd. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. If you picture a shepherd, you picture two tools, right, on his person. You usually picture that long thing with the crook at the top, which didn't always have the crook at the top, but that is the staff. That's a big, giant stick, a big, giant, tall stick above the head of the shepherd, right? Then he has in his belt, which you don't see, right? It rarely is it even depicted on flannel graphs. That's the shebet. It's called the rod. Now, rod and staff, it sounds like the rod, if you're going to... if you didn't know anything about Hebrew or the Bible or ancient Near Eastern history, I'm going to hit you with either the rod or the staff. Which one you want, right? Oh, the old staff. Rod sounds painful. You'd much rather be hit by the rod. The rod is a stick. It's what it is. It's used to count the sheep, right? It's used to slap the sheep on the nose if they get out of line. The staff is for protecting from the enemies, the bear, the lion, whatever comes after the flock. The shebet is used for discipline, right? The rod is used for discipline. The staff, right? I mean, that's for doing damage, right? The rod is for correction. Another way that it's used in the kitchen. Isaiah uses it this way, of the gal in the kitchen who's preparing meals. She has in her arsenal of tools the shebet. Talks about grinding cumin, the spices in the kitchen, with a shebet. It's a stick that is used in the kitchen, which is great because it works real well as a disciplinary tool. The wooden spoon is what, I mean, that's the idea. Picture the wooden spoon when you hear the word rod in the Bible or shebet. There's one more. It's sometimes translated the scepter. The scepter. The shebet is talked about in terms of a king. He has a scepter, and that word's getting lost in our day too. But it is often, depending on the times and the nation, gilded with gold and has some jewels on it perhaps. But, you know, in most days, it's just a stick in the hand of the king. It's an extension of him being the king. He points to it. He allows people in. It's like a conductor has a, you know, conducting thing.
Stick.
What is that, wand? I don't know what it's
wand.
Called.
Wand. Yeah, that there thing. There you go.
Yeah. That deal, that's what the king had, only it was a thicker stick. And that stick that he carried in his hand, you know, even if he had a fool in his presence, he'd smack the fool, I suppose. But that's the rod. So now read this again. Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you strike him with a shebet, that is not to kill him. That's not to break his arms. That's not to, you know, bruise him or bloody him. That's to spank him like you would a little lamb, right? Like you'd use in a kitchen to do some cooking. Like a king would do on the throne. Maybe that's slap somebody if they were out of line or call somebody over. The shebet. If you strike him with the shebet, right, he won't die. You'll keep him from the consequences of his behavior. If you strike him with the shebet, right, you will save his soul from Sheol. Hmm. The method in the Bible is exactly the method in nature. We were talking about one of our kids just before he came out. We were praying, thinking about tonight, and you were talking about Matthew. Oops, I let it slip out. How he used to play with the electrical outlet, right?
Yes.
And he, that was a showdown, was it not?
Oh, absolutely.
Tell them what you told me before he came out, just that feeling of him standing there, that little toddler. How old was he when he was doing that? He went through
a phase. Well, he was crawling, so what, 8 months, 9 months, 10 months, when they're crawling. Before they're walking, but they're crawling. Yes, and that was his favorite thing. That outlet was his favorite thing. And we had the little plastic, you know, because you didn't want them to electrocute themselves. But you still, you know, we didn't want them to touch the actual outlet, even with the plastic thing in it. We didn't think that was a good idea. So that was our big showdown. And, I mean, one day, and my friend is here that I was in tears with on the phone after the 10th time of disciplining him, one after the other, in probably 15 minutes, he was disciplined 10 times for doing that one thing. Because he would look at me, and he would crawl back over and he would touch it. And I would shebet his little bottom and he would look at me and he would crawl back over there and he'd look at me and he'd touch it again. 10 times in a row, one after the other.
And he's
he was a tough one.
Tough kid too, because the shebet, I don't know how you picture my wife, you know, using the shebet, but it's not, you know, she's a sixth grade teacher, right? I mean, and I know we don't do that in California, which by the way, 23 states still allow spanking in public school. Some kind of corporal punishment. California does, and that's why we're raising such terrible children, in part. But
not here, though.
Right, not here.
Not in this room.
But here's the point, right? She knew how to whack that kid so that he felt the pain of it all. But in that battle, think of this verse now. We're trying to save him from 220 volts, right? Mm-hmm. Right. We don't want him to die, right? Or 110. What is it? I don't know. I'm not an electrician. 220 is he's around the dryer. No, with the... Yeah. No. It's 110, right? 120? Sorry. I'm studying most of the time ancient Near Eastern cultures and stuff, so.
They didn't have electricity.
We did, right. No, they didn't, see? I can be ignorant about electricity, volts and all
it's
that.
It's okay.
What's the point, though? I don't want him, when he does have an outlet that doesn't have a cover on it, to stick his finger into the outlet. So we're saving him from problems, right? And even the rebellion of that. Why did we want to break him of the rebellion against the authority of his parents? Because one day he'll be dealing with the authority of God, right? And God's Shabbat is a lot bigger and more painful than ours. Mm-hmm. Or he'll be dealing with a boss or a leader or an authority or a cop or a judge or an umpire, whoever it might be. We need him to learn, right, that our pain is trying to redirect his life and his rebellion. See, so the whole point of loving parents disciplining their kids is critical. Let's put it this way. Let's invert the principle from Proverbs 13:24. Whoever spares the rod, you keep your Shabbat for just grinding cumin and counting sheep, right? Here's the thing. Then you hate your child, right? You hate your child. You hate your kid. I'm just sorry you hate your child, right? But the one who loves him is diligent to discipline him. Now, I've heard all the liberal arguments. I got plenty of people telling me it's wrong to spank my kids and all of that. It is not. We'll create violent kids. The most violent kids I've ever met, right, are kids that were never spanked. My kids have never gone up and hit your kids. They've never, you know, smacked your kids. And they were spanked from the time they were you know, little toddlers, little kids, infants. We'll talk about that. The application of discipline does not create violent children. Spanking, for instance, it gives, you know, when your kid comes out, and this is hard for me, I'm thinking you've been crammed up inside my wife's body, you come out, don't you want to stretch out? The nurse says, no, right? What do they want to be? Swaddled, right? They want that. They need that protection. And you know what? 16-year-olds want that too. They need parameters. They need boundaries. They need parents to give them that sense of where does the end of my freedom stop? They won't necessarily thank you for the discipline now, but they will later. I guarantee it. My dad was great with his Shabbat, right? And I never thanked him once for spanking me the dozens and dozens of times I got spanked until, of course, I became an adult. And thankfully, even for us, we've had a little bit of encouragement from our kids. All three of them we were able to talk about today have thanked us in one way or another, right? I think of one of my kids leading in Awana, right? Helping the kids in Awana. I remember one night, so unprovoked, we were not talking about this, comes home and says, thank you so much for spanking me when I was a kid, right?
Thanks. That was Matthew, by the way.
That was Matthew, yeah.
Randomly.
And so we did a lot, right?
Yeah.
We were tired of doing it. Thank you for doing that. Why? Because he's dealing with some kids now at church, right? Not yours, of course, but some kids. And he recognizes they don't do what they're told, right? They don't respond to leadership. They don't respond. He can't get all these kids to respond to a verbal command. And, of course, these kids of mine were trained with the Shabbat to learn to do that. They don't do it perfectly, obviously imperfect. But the point of thanking the parents for that, all three of our kids, in one way or another, has been thankful to us in their own way and telling us thanks for the discipline. And I, of course, am thankful for the discipline I received. Unfortunately, we are playing in this new generation, 60s, 70s, 80s kids that have grown up, first generation really growing up without consistent discipline on a whole in our Western culture, and it's a disaster, right? Do not tell me we're better off today with the attitudes and the lifestyle choices and all of the self-discipline. By that I mean the regimented lifestyle of stopping before going into dangerous areas of life and behavior and words and thoughts and activities. Don't tell me we're any better off today than we were in the 1950s. And you can mock the 1950s all you want, right? But I'm glad that as I was raised in the 60s and 70s, our parents were very good at applying the Shabbat to our rear end. So we need the encouragement. By the way, if you want a verse on that, I was thinking of Hebrews 12:5. I jotted down. You've forgotten the encouragement addressed to you as sons, which was, now he quotes the passage we just quoted, my son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord. Right? In other words, there's encouragement in that. Your kids will, in a very paradoxical way, be encouraged when you get serious and consistent and faithful in disciplining your kids. There's a sense of belonging, care, validation, leadership, parameters, as compared to the illegitimate child, right? The urchin, if you will, from Oliver or whatever, I don't know. I just picturing kids that run around doing whatever they want, right? The legitimacy of parents that are disciplining their kids is exactly what our kids long for. Real quickly, because time's a-wasting. A couple things real quick. Let's move on to this. Components of biblical correction. There are three things. We'll apply these in how we've done it with all the age level stages of our parenting. But there are three basic components, and I could give you all the passages on this, but I'll just reference a couple. Express displeasure at sin. If I'm going to correct my kids, I need to let them know I am displeased. I am not happy. which is terrible because sometimes people in their embarrassment, particularly in public, they don't show displeasure. They all sometimes giggle and laugh and, oh, ha, ha, ha. It's not funny, right? Sin is not funny. Rebellion, disobedience is not funny. We need to show our displeasure. I think of Genesis 6 when it says the Lord was displeased, right, because of sin. His heart was grieved because of sin. Your heart needs to be grieved by the sin of your children. Whatever it is that they're doing that they're told not to do. And you don't have to wait for some thing where you can find a chapter and verse on it, right? Remember the tree in the garden? Nothing wrong with eating fruit off of a tree. Why was it wrong? Because God said it was wrong, right? You can't find any verse about your kid going to bed at 8 o'clock, right? But if they won't go to bed at 8 o'clock, that's the rule the authority has made for them. Then if they break that rule, they are breaking a rule they need to be punished and disciplined for. That all I'm saying is we need to show our displeasure when our kids do not respond to the leadership and authority of their parents. So express that displeasure. Make it clear. I am not happy with this. We don't need a rant. We don't need a tantrum. We don't need anger. We don't need yelling. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a very calm, rational, simple statement. Even a mom with an infant can show her displeasure, right, by the way she speaks to her kid without ever yelling or getting angry. Express your displeasure. Number two, so important, provide a clear rebuke. And a rebuke means this was wrong, here's why it's wrong, here's what you need to do right, right? It is the clear showing of what you've done. If you go to God, Psalm 32, Psalm 51, you look at passages where God's dealing with us as a father, He always makes the sin clear. Your hand was heavy upon me, like the fever heat of summer, right? I couldn't think of anything else. It was the sin that I had committed, it was ever before me. Make sure that in your parenting, your kid is not having you respond with discipline without, first of all, sensing that mom and dad they're disappointed, they're displeased, and secondly, they told me very clearly what I did wrong and why it's wrong, right? And it can be as simple as, and I know it sounds like an old adage from the 60s, right? Because I said so, right? That's good, but tie it back to the whole point. And the point is, we are parents. We're given the responsibility to guide you. If we said take a shower, make your bed, put your clothes away, or go to bed at a certain time, right? That is as though God were speaking to you. Now, that's not a line you probably want to pull out every day, right? Picture my voice as God's voice. You don't want to say that every day. But that's the principle in your mind that you need to connect in the mind of your kid. We need to make clear that when there is a problem, we clearly spell it out. Reprove, rebuke, reprimand, make it clear. And then lastly, and this is the worst part, I know you don't like it, enforce a painful consequence. Enforce a painful consequence. When your kid learns to disregard authority, like when they disobey you, right, or they throw a tantrum or whatever it is, when they learn to disobey you, they're learning a pattern that is going to hurt them even worse if you don't nip it in the bud as a child, right? That's... And I know some people, my kid doesn't respond to discipline. Your kid responds to discipline. That's why he doesn't sit there and tap his fingernail against the lens of his eye. Not a kid in this church that has that problem. Not a kid. Why? It hurts, right? Every kid responds to pain. Unless your kid is in the ICU or something, right? It has some massive medical problem. 99.99999% of kids, right? They don't do things that hurt. Right? And we're not talking about the teenagers and cutting and all the psychological problems of that. I'm talking about when your kid, even as an infant, right, they may do it once, but they recognize this hurts, so I don't do it. And whatever that is, right, that's the connection between discipline. A painful consequence is coming. And when they're little, it can be as simple as that tangible, sentient, painful consequence. That's why the Shabbat is so effective, because it stings and it hurts, and they learn to connect bad behavior, sinful behavior, with the consequence of pain. Now, I know this is weird. If I was doing this back in the 40s, I'd be like, now people are like, what are you talking about? I had some parents once tell me, this is wrong, this is illegal. I picked up the phone and I called the police department. Sometimes that's a great thing to do in counseling. Fine, let's call the cops. It was great. It was such a providential day. I got just the right sergeant at the desk when I finally got through to the thing. And I said, hey, I'm a pastor down the street. I said, I got a couple parents here, and they're fighting me on the fact that spanking their children is illegal. Can you tell us if it's illegal to spank it? He started laughing. Right? He said, oh, I just wish, right, more parents would spank their children so they wouldn't end up here. That was perfect. It's perfect. Thank you very much. Click. Perfect. And I said to these people, what the world, and if you don't think Satan is involved in the world and what is pushed out there, they love, right, to downplay the basic biblical principle of applying pain, even corporal, physical pain, to our children to keep them from continuing down a path of sin. They love to posit that in such a negative light, right? Remember that that judge that came out on TV, the YouTube video was out, where he's beating a 16-year-old kid, and the mom's getting in, anybody saw that, right, is what people want you to picture when I'm talking about disciplining our kids. That is not what we're talking about. Mm. We are talking about spanking. We're not talking about that, if you know what I'm talking, the video I'm talking about. There's plenty of other examples of people hauling off and doing this or that to body slam their kids. We're not talking about that. We're talking about calm, rational, logical discussion with displeasure, reprimand, and a painful consequence. And the younger they are, the only language they understand is, this stings, this hurts, this is painful, and I'm going to stop. The components of biblical correction. Those are the basic components right there on the screen that we want to talk about now from the youngest of ages right on up through our teenagers. And so we're going to start with the burning question. When do I start this? When do I start to apply some kind of pain to my kid for disobedience? I don't know. 7, 8 years old? What do you think, Carla?
Well, we started the first time we asked them to do something, they didn't do it, which for our children was 7 months. Not 7 years, 7 months.
And what were you telling them, to set the table,
no,
cook dinner? What?
For us, the first incident where they were blatantly disobedient was the changing table. When we asked them not to flip over on the changing table.
Oh, but they don't know they're doing wrong. They're just sweet little precious angels from heaven. That's what some people are going to say.
Well, they know exactly what they're doing. Because the very first time they do it and you say no with a stern voice, they stop. And a lot of them, their eyes well up with tears. And guess what? They don't flip over. They stop their activity. They know exactly what you're saying. Because when they stop, you know that they've understood you. And for some kids, saying no with a stern voice is enough. Sometimes it is. The precious few saying no is enough. But that was the first moment with our first child that he got a little swat on his thigh. And you know what? That caused the tears to well. And guess what? He stopped flipping over on the changing table. He stopped his activity there. You know, now, unfortunately, some of the things that we do in our culture is we add straps to changing tables. Okay, that's great if you have to, you know, grab something from the bottom drawer. But ultimately, we should be training them how to lay there with no strap and be safe, which is when we started doing that.
How does that apply to the people that kid-proof their house, right?
Yeah.
What are we talking? Let's Christmas tree.
Right.
We can't have a Christmas tree because, you know, we got toddlers.
I have this discussion with moms every Christmas. You have a Christmas tree every Christmas, even when you have a little one, and you train them not to touch the Christmas tree. And it's a really hard job for you, Mom, for one Christmas. But you know what? You can't go to Grandma's. You can't go to the neighbors who invite you over. You can't go to your home fellowship group and expect them not to touch the Christmas tree if they can touch yours. So we used our home as their training ground.
So you leave knives out and...
We did. We didn't move anything except we did put the electrical outlet because obviously we found we had one child with the, you know, affection for the outlets. We did put the electrical in the outlets, the little plugs, and the only other thing we moved was we had a jar of marbles, like pretty marbles that were on the table. Everything else stayed. That means the silk plants that would get dumped over and dirt would go everywhere. The trash cans, that was a biggie for the one kid with the outlets. He also loved the trash cans. And we went to the, you know, we started training them not to touch those things, not to flip the silk plant over, not to drop the trash can, because otherwise you can't go anywhere. You can't go to Grandma's. You can't go anywhere without your child being in the middle of everything.
See, and this was, we were so non-kid-proofed in our house, people would say, I thought you had kids or something, if we had sitters or whatever, they were upstairs. They didn't believe we had children because we had all the stuff out. And they were like, well, I thought you had kids. All I'm telling you, you can change your kid, or you can completely change his environment. And God would have us change our kids to know, right? Mm-hmm. It's like the infants grabbing your earrings and stuff.
Yep.
Remember that?
Yep. Grabbing your hair or grabbing your earrings.
So you pulled your hair up in a bun and never wore any jewelry again.
That's what the solution for a lot of young moms is. Put your hair back and don't wear earrings. We didn't do that. I wore my hair down and I wore earrings. And, you know, grandmas would have glasses and I would hand the baby over and they would have to interact with grandma without grabbing the glasses off of her face. So we trained them from the very beginning, and it's very simple at first. All you have to do when they grab the glasses or the earring is grab their little hand and apply some pressure. And you know what happens? They let go. They let go and they've got the message. And we would always add the clear rebuke of don't grab the glasses or don't pull hair or don't grab earrings. So there was a clear rebuke at the same time when we were grabbing their little hand and just applying pressure. As soon as we applied pressure, whoop, the hand would stop.
Unless it's Matthew. And when it was Matthew, seriously, he needed a lot more pain than the other two. And I remember, and of course we'd read a lot, but I remember even with a grandparent, I could grab him right here. God created this little piece of whatever that is between your shoulder, right above your clavicle there. He made that just for us parents. Because you can take that and see if mom's little grabbing of the hand and pinching doesn't work. I take that and I do it until I get him going, yeah, right? I could apply enough pain and lean forward. And even at a restaurant or with people around, I could say, don't, right? Get my voice down enough. Don't. And now I've connected his rebellion, whatever it is, right? When I've said, don't touch the glasses, don't pull on that person, your grandma's hair or whatever. I can apply enough pain, even with the stubborn, what they call, quote unquote, strong-willed child, right? Right. There's enough pressure points on his body to break the strong-willed child from being an autonomous strong-willed child to learn to teach them. Ephesians 6:1, it's a command with a promise. We love our children. We want them to experience the blessing of God, right, to get them to obey their parents. It means, though, even at the youngest of ages, we need to apply the pain.
Right. Another one that comes up right away is rebellion in sleeping with your little ones, the little tiny ones who have to learn to sleep independently without you. Rocking them to sleep and making sure that you've got them perfectly down in the crib when they can't move, and then you sneak out the door, and right, all of that happens because we're so desperate for sleep, Mom. I totally get your feeling. But that was another area you have to train them from the very beginning to be independent of you. And if all of their needs are met, you know they're not hungry, you know that they're not dirty, you know that they're comfortable in every possible way, they have to learn independence of you, and you can't reward them by giving them your presence in the room. They have to learn to kind of gut it out on their own.
See, what I find is that parents, if they're not willing to discipline their kids right away, see, then they keep acquiescing, conceding, negotiating with their kids mm-hmm. to where they get so frustrated. Now when they are at their wit's end, they lash out with something that's not discipline, mm-hmm. right? It's an explosion of anger. It's getting mad. See, you have all the power as the parent, right? You don't need to yell. You don't need to scream. You don't need to get angry. All you need to do is discipline them right away. Our kids, from the youngest of ages, I mean, we had kids just like yours that did not want to go to bed, did not want to stay in their crib. Right, but I can tell you, I think with all three kids for the entire lifetime, they came out of the room two or three times at the most, right?
Yeah.
And probably there was all Matthew. Probably was only Matthew.
Actually, that's probably true.
But the point is, see what I'm saying? You're not supposed to get out of bed, right? We didn't have to
lock our door.
We didn't have to barricade the thing because you were going to get disciplined if we said lay down and go to bed and you didn't, right? And you started crawling over the edge of the crib or whatever, even when you got into your big boy bed, if you start, you don't get out, right? You don't come out.
That was our rule, not out of their bed.
You don't come
out. Couldn't
get
anywhere in their room. They had to stay on the bed.
And you know what? It doesn't take long. You can either neglect the difficulty of enforcing the rules with some pain, right, and create years of havoc, or you can take those few months on whatever the issue is and win that battle, right? And the tool God has given us. Yeah. Right, is the mechanism of discipline, the correction of inflicting some pain into their life, a consequence that is not pleasant. And you can now shape their entire lives. Start as young as you can possibly start. Matter of fact, I'm not big, you know, I'm not a giant Dobson fan, but I remember reading his book, Dare to Discipline, and I know they revised it since. I didn't read the new one, but the old one, I remember a statement he made. He says, if you started disciplining your kids, and this is obviously an overstatement, hyperbole, if you started disciplining your kid on the second day of his life, you've started one day too late, right? And that's from a psychologist, right? I mean, I don't buy all that he says in all of his books. He gets off the path here and there and a lot of things that I can't agree with. But when it came to simple things like that, well, that was great. It was good to hear somebody be able to stand up and say, we need to redirect lives through the infliction of some kind of unpleasant consequence for rebellious and sinful behavior.
Right. So then what actually happens? They break a rule and you have to discipline them. What do you do? We followed just this few steps. First of all, we always did it privately. We took them to the bathroom, their bedroom, someplace where their other siblings weren't sitting there, laugh at them, ha ha ha, you got it this time, or whatever. You know, we'd take them to a private place. We would make sure that they knew, well, they had to know what they had done wrong. We would ask them, why are you here? You know, it's not because, you know, you want to spend time with mom and dad. It's because something happened wrong. They had to articulate it, even from the youngest age. And of course, at the beginning, when they're first learning to talk, maybe they couldn't explain it all, but they could give you one word, you know, disobey. Or, you know, obviously they're not going to say that in their first words. But, you know, something where they would give you an indication. And once they started talking, they had to tell us what they had done. And if they couldn't tell us what they had done, they actually got more discipline. If they couldn't articulate why they were there.
Not couldn't, but wouldn't.
Right, you're right. Couldn't and, well, wouldn't for most of the times.
Oh, yeah, but like God, we're not going to discipline someone if they're ignorant of their violation. Right. But we want them to make sure that they can say it. We're going to guide them along the way to tell them, here's what you've done wrong.
Right.
But they got to be able to admit it. That's called confession. We got to get it out. We got to agree with mom and dad, you've done something wrong.
And then they would get whatever the number of swats was, 2 swats, 1 swat, 3 swats.
Just how angry you were, right?
Those were all determined ahead of time.
Ahead of time.
You know, it wasn't the moment for the parent to get angry and they push my button, so now here I am. Ah! No, we ahead of time knew that if they do this, they get this. It was clearly spelled out. They knew it, and they knew that what they had done was wrong, so they were going to receive these consequences. They got the swats after they had articulated what they did, and then there was a discussion between us where we taught our child to say, I'm sorry. And we, as the parent, said, I forgive you. Not, it's okay, because it's not okay. You've done something wrong, but I forgive you. And then we would hug to affirm our love for them. We would spend time praying for them, maybe about the very incident. We know that Matthew's having trouble with the outlets today. Can you help him, God? You know, we would pray about the actual issue, whatever it was. When he was talking, he wasn't dealing with the outlets anymore. It was lots of other things. But, and then when we left the room and the private place where we'd had this discipline session, it was over. Mom or dad, whoever did the discipline, walked out of the room and didn't mention it again. That child doesn't get, you know, grudges held against him for the rest of the afternoon because he messed you up and you're angry because of him, right? When it was done, it was done. And we walked out of the room fine. But we determined, you know, by studying scripture and seeing it in our own life, that the consequence, whatever it was that was, however many swats it was, that it had to be a painful consequence for our child. It had to be a consistent consequence, or they weren't going to make the changes in their lives that we needed to make and have them be more obedient.
And if the problem or the disobedience was irritating for us, embarrassing for us, or caught us at a time when we were angry, instead of doing it right at the moment, maybe you need time to step back and cool off. Because the worst thing you can do is react. We're not reacting. Right? It's like the California Penal Code. It lists the infraction and the penalty. We want to make sure that we're responding in that judicial way. Here, you've done wrong. This is serious. It's a big deal. And there were gradated problems. You know, you lie. You show disrespect. I mean, those were at the top of the list. You got a lot of swats for that. And when they were really young, we used the wooden spoon from the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, that got ineffective.
Well, the thing was, because we had one particularly strong-willed one.
Matthew.
He's a great kid. You should get to know him now. He's a great kid. You would enjoy him. But he wasn't quite as enjoyable when he was little for mom and dad. But anyway, at one point when he was 4, I was disciplining him so much. And at our house, when they went, we went into the bedroom usually, and we had them lay over our lap, and that's how we swatted them, so that it was a controlled environment.
There
was
no like child abuse.
Well, they weren't running away from you, and you're running after them. You know, it was a very controlled environment, and they were supposed to submissively lay over you at that point so that they could have their swats. Well, the day that Matthew looked up at me and laughed and said, "That doesn't hurt, Mommy," was the day that I thought my head was going to explode. And I called him, and that was the day when Dad took over all the discipline of Matthew from that day on. And that has to happen at some point, probably, for most kids, because they get to the stage where it's not as effective. And you moms know it already. They don't listen to you the same way that they listen to them. And for some reason, their voice and their disapproval means so much more to your kids, which is the way it should be. And so when he was four, at that point on, he took over all the discipline of the kids. And then I became the record keeper all day long. I kept track of how many they got. And I know you might think, well, they're four. How in the world could they remember that long? And how could you defer their punishment for so long? What if it happened at 8 a.m. and he didn't get home until 6 p.m? You know what? Then they waited till 6 p.m. I mean, it's just the way it was. And knowing that when Dad got home, they were going to have to, you know, deal with the consequences.
The night that I got home that night, I remember that. Oh, which, by the way, I know that sounds so, you know, 1950s, wait till your father gets home. But again, can I go back to the fact that we were raising better kids in the 1950s than we are today? Not a bad thing. Dad, you know, I know we don't like it. We like to come home, be the good guy. Everybody gets to play with Dad, all that. Dads have to, and it's not a bad thing. We come in dispassionate about their problem, but we have to come in and we have to discipline our kids. I remember that day, my wife saying, this little, you know, wooden spoon, you know, about broke it on his butt. It doesn't hurt him anymore. So, you know, I went in and was able to construct a new Chibet. Chipette 2.0. It was helpful. And I remember sitting my kids, I brought in the younger brother just for fun, to show them that as I made a Chibet, I had a nice piece of finished wood, you know, hardwood of some kind. I don't know. I'm not a woodworker, but a really nice piece. And I cut out what looked like, remember the old thing you'd use with the ball and you'd do that with it? Just a nice paddle. Now, I didn't put holes in it, thought about it, but I just sanded it nice. As I did all this and they sat on the stools in my workbench watching me do this, I talked about discipline. And I talked about my dad and how I love my dad and how my dad had a paddle for us. And now I have a paddle for you, and this is going to keep you out of sin and trouble and problems with God. And my paddle hurts less than God's paddle, but the spoon ain't cutting it anymore. And so we created this paddle, Chibet 2.0, and kept it on the very top shelf of their closet. And from then on, we had a new paddle, which Matthew never again said, it doesn't hurt.
No.
Because it hurt, and he got the point. So we're applying that discipline in a calm way. Dad, especially with boys, I do think at some point, how old was that transfer of discipline
to me?
Probably 4 years old. It's a good time, I think, especially with a strong-willed kid, to move that discipline to dad. And by the way, just to quote Ephesians 6 again, fathers, right? Do not provoke your children to anger. Bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Dads have got to take an active role in this. And I know, let me say it again, you want to come home, you want to be the hero, you want to be the fun guy, want to be the nice guy. Now, fine. This is great. You're going to have to spend the first 15 minutes being the disciplinarian. God is a disciplinarian. Get in there, deal with it, give them their spankings, hug them, reaffirm your love for them, have them go downstairs, apologize to mom. I mean, get it right with her, give her a hug, tell her you're sorry, make sure that I've gotten the tears in their eyes and they felt the pain and I want a sincere apology, and then we get back. Finish dinner, set the table, let's get on with our night. And you know what? It works beautifully because I'm not the one who's all frustrated, right? So I'm not whipping them, you know, slamming them against the wall. I'm measured and just under control, disciplining the children so that they get the point. You don't disobey your mother. Mm-hmm. So critical.
Yeah. And another thing I just want to mention before we move on there is the fact that you really have your kids. They know, they understand that they think that they're going to get away with discipline issues if you're out in public, if you're at the grocery store, if you're at grandma's house, if you're at church. then mom's not going to discipline me. And they learn that really, really young. And they think, okay, well, I couldn't do this at home, but I can do this here because mom and dad won't do anything about it. You really need to make sure that you rethink that. You should do something about it. Take them away privately. Take them to your car. I've had to do that many times. Leave all my groceries in the grocery cart and take the children out to the van and deal with the discipline and go back in and get the grocery cart. They didn't get out of it, you know, or at grandma's house. Go in the garage or the backyard or wherever had to be done. You can't get them used to the fact that they're going to get away with it if you're in a public setting, because they'll use that against you. So, unfortunately.
Not anger, not reactive, not screaming, not yelling, measured, loving discipline.
Right, right.
What about when they get a little older?
Well, did you want to talk about these other issues?
Sure.
Or did you want to skip that?
Let's talk about that next week.
Okay. All right. The strong-willed child we already mentioned, if you have a strong-willed child, you're going to have to be even more consistent, and you're probably going to have to be more creative, maybe they get more than one consequence, or the other parent takes over, so you know that's something you have to think about. But as they get older, by the time they get to school, if you have done this consistently, you've done the hard work of training them that what you say you mean, then when they get to elementary school, you enter this wonderful land of bliss. It's really amazing. You tell them, go put their pajamas on, and they walk up the stairs and they put their pajamas on. And you're astonished. You don't even realize that the first happens. The first time it happens, and then after a couple times, you're like, wait a minute, what just happened? That was awesome. And if you've done all the training that you need to, or as a lot of it, then it's going to be easier. But you are probably going to have to switch if they do things that are rebellious or disobedient or disrespectful or whatever your house rules are. You're going to have to switch up probably what you're doing to actually have as a consequence. You may need to add other things, whether that's going to bed earlier or losing some of their allowance or not getting to play Nintendo or something. Other than just the spanking, you may add a second consequence, which we did for a long time, or eventually when they get older, that becomes their consequence and the spanking just disappears.
Here's how you know it's time to shift, and I started doing this with the kids when we started adding multiple consequences for one thing, and it almost always involved some kind of Chibet application. But when I'd say, okay, you can... You can go to bed an hour early, or you can have, you know, five swats or four swats on the paddle, right? When I gave them the option and they started always choosing the paddle, I knew the paddle was less effective, right? So now I wanted the unpleasant consequence to shift. Now, they don't know that tipping their hand on this, but that's great to know. Okay, it's worse for you to lose dessert. It's worse for you to go to bed an hour early. It's worse for you to miss something this weekend because you're grounded than the paddle. Then you start to realize the paddle's becoming ineffective, right? And that's when it starts to go away. Now, again, she said it, and some of you may not even believe it, but if you are consistent, that's why I'm so happy that if you have no kids or you have infant children here, you're in a great spot, because if you are serious for those first few years, by the time they get to elementary school, it is like you start... there's very little to discipline for. It's a periodic and just, you know, punctuated reality. It's not like it was, especially when they're 2 years old, 2.5, mm-hmm. 3 years old. Mm-hmm. It's like it's every second of the day moms mm-hmm. feel like they're disciplining their kids. But you get into that nice stretch, but you have to invest. Unfortunately, if you don't invest in those first few years, elementary school becomes a terror. Mm-hmm. I once was called out, as the pastor, we get weird calls sometimes, of he was probably in sixth grade or fifth grade, had his mother... who had crawled up on the top of the refrigerator, right, because the kid was threatening her with a knife. This was a fifth grader, I think it was, right? And I had to go in and try and defuse the situation with body armor and care, right? But, I mean, think about that. Here's an elementary school kid threatening to kill his mother. His mother was literally climbed from her stool to the counter to the top of her refrigerator. Picture that. Because of an elementary kid, and he, of course, he had the rule of the house as a little kid. Talk about terrible twos. Now it's terrible 12s, right? He's out of control. And we've got to recognize the importance of doing this as soon as you possibly can and getting this habit, you know, of consistency. Which, if I were to say, why do you think people don't do it, to go back to that period of time, that will give you some of that blissful age, you know, that stint in elementary school. Why do you think parents choose not to do this? Besides the culture, listening to the culture, why is it that we don't see more great elementary school years? And why are we giving, why are we not disciplining when they're 3 and 4 years old?
Because it's really hard. I mean, it's really hard. It's really hard to keep doing what you know in your head is right when your body and your mind and your emotions are so exhausted. Because, especially with the younger kids, a lot of you guys have younger kids and Thrive, you are working on this 24/7. Because even in the middle of the night, when they're waking up 8 times, you're going to have to stop that pattern. Your discipline doesn't even just happen when they go to sleep, because you're still in there dealing with the discipline. And, you know, you shouldn't be going in there 8 times. That is an area to be disciplined. But it's because it's so hard to do it and be consistent. We just get tired. That's why we give up. And I remember a grandmother type coming up to me when my boys were 3 and 4 and saying to me, you know what? Keep at it, because you're making an investment in your future. And I know you can't see it now, but what you do now will pay off when they're 13 and 15. And that's where I am today. And it definitely pays off. Definitely pays off. But something we forgot to say, when they're younger, you do have to remember that something we tried to put into practice is trying to say yes when we can. There's so many things you have to say no to. This was like at my baby shower. You know how sometimes the moms give you a little piece of advice, the moms who come and they put them on little 3x5 cards and make a little book for you. This was the best piece of advice I think I got from one of those showers. Say yes when you can. You know, does it really matter if they run out in the puddles and get all wet when it's raining? No. In fact, it would be a fun and wonderful memory for them, right? It doesn't mean they're going to have pneumonia if you let them run around in the puddles, right? You know, does it really matter? Does it really matter if you let them have sugar cereal for breakfast? I mean, unless your child is allergic to sugar, okay, and I get that, and you have some spaz out. But does it really matter if you let them have that? Does it really matter if you let them stay up an extra 15 minutes? In the grand scheme of life, does it really matter? So we learned, tried to do from the very beginning. We had lots of things we had to say no to, but we tried to say yes when we could. Now, of course, you may be on the flip side of that. You may be saying yes to way too many things. If you're the person that's saying yes to way too many things, that piece of advice was not for you. You need to say no, and you need to get on the being faithful to being disciplined. But if you're a faithful discipliner, say yes when you can.
Let me put it a different way, and this is good in my upbringing. My dad was a disciplinarian for sure, and I got plenty of spankings, but he didn't have a lot of rules, right? The rules that he had to be kept, and I've tried to follow that in my own parenting. I want my kids to know you don't disobey mom and dad, but we don't have an endless list of rules for them to keep, right? Mm-hmm. We've got some basic rules. They're in place, things you got to do, things you cannot do, things you should never do, but we you know, it's not endless. We don't have. I know people get the impression when they leave, if they don't know us, they think these are the Nazi parents, you know, these kids are absolutely, they must be tortured. What are they like? They wear bow ties and they, yes, sir, no, sir. You know, get to know them. I mean, ask my kids if their parents are Nazis. They're going to tell you that we're not, right? They're going to say their parents are fun and they're decent people, and they won't use that phrase probably, but whatever. For us, the pendulum has swung so far. Just because we're consistent, we spank our children, we've been consistent with discipline in the home, as consistent as we can be, we look like Nazis in a culture like ours. But like my dad used to say, you know, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king, right? Think about that. A little bit of discipline looks like nuts, craziness these days, right? Why? Because there's not much of it going on. But one of the ways we help to make sure that you don't misunderstand this is that we don't have, you know, a stack of rules on every single thing that they've got to do. We've got some basic rules. There's order. There's not chaos in the home. There's discipline. There's courtesy. There's manners. Right. But we're not sending them to finishing school. Right. You know what I'm saying?
And our rules were simple. Stuff like respect authority. Be kind. Self-control.
Self-promotion. No self-promotion.
No self-promotion. Yeah. I mean, they were just maybe 5 simple, broad rules like that. And then they knew. And, you know, we didn't just run in with a spoon. You know, we'd say, remember, you're not respecting authority. After they got that warning, then the consequence would come. And we were sure that they understood, okay, remember, you're not being respectful. If it happened again, then the consequence would happen.
Yeah, no counting to three. No, this
no
is
way.
Your third warning. You know, it's just, we would definitely, on most cases, give one warning unless it's one of the top 10 problems. But we're not sitting there, you know,
waiting.
Counting, and there's no timeouts for us. We never use the timeout. There's none of that. We go right to what works, what is biblically sanctioned, and we apply some kind enforce some kind of painful consequence. When they're younger, it's physical pain. When it's older, it's whatever pain of lack or deprivation of something they want. Now,
right. If
you're from a broken home or you're divorced or you're single parent, whatever, it gets harder, especially if you got a kid, a strong-willed kid, or even just boys in general, often need that male disciplinarian in their lives. And sometimes you're going to have to enlist an uncle, a grandfather, some male figure that's got a deeper voice and hair on his chest, you know, just to have that sense of authority that you need to cooperate with and have some kind of contract with, if you will, where grandpa or uncle, you know, Jim is able to come into your home when there's really an issue of rebellion or a pattern of rebellion to start applying some of the discipline we're talking about.
Right.
What about when they're teenagers?
Yeah,
when
they get to be teenagers, you know, it's less about actual actions a lot of times, and it's more about attitudes and respect that you're having to discipline. I mean, maybe for some it's actions, but a lot of attitudes and disrespect that you're dealing with. Unfortunately, this is a time really that, yes, there are consequences, but a lot of what you're doing is trying to leave them alone, too. They're learning their independence, and they're becoming adults. And you nitpicking about the shirt that they're wearing or what their bed looks like and all the things that are, I mean, I know they seem important, but you have to, the whole thing of pick your battles wisely, you need to look for the bigger character issues that you want to deal with and spend your discipline on those things. Disrespect. Bad attitude, not, you know, if their closet's a mess.
We definitely will hit this hard next week, but the point of our parenting is to get them to be independent. So, you know, the Psalms make it very clear. Our idea is to launch them into the world. They're arrows, right? It's not protection. It's not cloistering. It's not keeping them. It's not a monastery. We're there to get them out into the world to make a difference for God. So when they're teenagers, I mean, we certainly want to help them move in that direction. But what we're looking at is when they sin against us as parents or even against anybody else, we're trying to think, if you took that attitude into your job, into your career, what would that do? And again, that's why our Shabbat is going to be less of a consequence than the grown-up Shabbat. You cop an attitude like you did with your mom today, with your boss, you will lose your job. That's a bigger problem than you being grounded for the next 2 weekends. See what I'm saying? I need you to sense and feel the painful consequence now, even if it was just a set of rolled eyes, right? Or you turned and you grunted or breathed hard or whatever. Look, that's an attitude problem that if you carry it into your life with your next authority, you will have some serious consequences in your life, right? So you cannot do that. So those are the subtleties of teenager life where we have to come cracking down on them. And they're, you know, we're not spanking them at this point, but we're definitely giving them those painful consequences so that they can learn to control themselves. Right. All about self-control.
And for us, it's stuff like allowance or loss of privilege, loss of an activity they want to do, can't go play golf, you know, have to pay for it yourself. You know, those kinds of things are the consequences that come with this. But again, you're picking the bigger issues and making the connection for them, saying what he just said. You know, the reason we're doing this is because if you continue to have this disrespectful attitude, when you do this to your boss, he will fire you, and then you won't have a job. You know, where they're starting to get the adult sense of what that would lead to.
Right, and the discipline, certainly, as we try to make the connection more one-to-one, you'll lose monetarily with certain problems in your life in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been saving, you know, for their cars, right, since they were little kids. And even that, I've got full control of that bank account, right? And the ultimate discipline, I mean, the big five, you know, seven SWAT violation is now I'm docking you $150, right? I'm pulling out. That could be $300. You want to lose $300? You know, there's issues like that to go into their car fund that they've been saving for. We'll talk about, you know, helping them learn to save and all that next week. But we want to get them to recognize if the consequence in your future will be monetary, we'd like to make it monetary now if we can. And there are ways to do that as parents with teenagers and to help them recognize your sin, your bad attitude, your, you know, snippy word is going to cost you.
Right.
And it, you know, it may be in your future $30,000 because you lose a job. Now it's going to be $300 and you're going to be mad because you're not going to be able to, you know, buy your car that you want or, you know, whatever it might be that they're saving for.
And we're going to make sure that our teenagers also are involved in the great youth groups that we've got at our church. So they're getting the support and encouragement of our pastors and the teaching and their small group leaders and all the support that they're going to need to do, be as obedient as they possibly can be in our home as they're learning to be an adult. And that's really a tough thing. We're trying to help them be adults, but they're still under your authority. I mean, you can understand why they have a hard time with that. And they're trying to find their way, and they're not as mature as adults are. It's harder for them to find their way. So a lot of times, at least for me, for the mom, I have to pull back. I have to stop being the mom. I have to, you know, stop making the lunches or doing the laundry or whatever. I need to pull away and let them gain more independence. And, you know, Mike's always trying to help me to do that, say, okay, let them go. It's all right. This isn't that important. Because I want to jump in and go, yeah, but when he was 12, this is what he was supposed to do. You know, and it's not the same. He's got to be more independent, and I've got to back off. That's a lot of what my parenting needs
right.
to be.
And even that, a lot of the discipline is so subtle as a teenager that they have to pay the consequences with us just being passive. Whether it's something they did, they squandered time in the afternoon, oh, they got to stay up and do homework or whatever, then we're like, well, whatever, you know, that your consequence. But I want to tie their lack of discipline or their lack of, you know, concentration or their distractiveness, I want to tie it to the consequence and make sure they see the connection and state my disapproval, even though I'm going to be passive and my passivity is what's affecting them in a negative way. It's causing them some displeasure. And that's what I want them to sense. I don't want to fix their problems for them, right?
Right.
It's about making them grow up. And when they're sowing and it's going to cause some difficult reaping, I want to let that happen, right?
Right.
I want them to experience that. And when they do wrong, I think about the donuts with John,
yeah.
right? Then I want you to make it right. I'm not going to apologize for something you failed to do. You're going to go to school. You're going to tell your teacher. You're going to write this person. You're going to tell your coach. You have to go and suffer some adult consequences here and be an adult. That's what we want to create in our teenagers. So that's a big part of what we're trying to accomplish. Now, listen, we want to have questions, and we better start them now if we're going to have any. But please don't ask questions about the super, super exception. Right? Well, what about if it's one of those exception deals? We know there's an exception almost to every rule. So we're not looking about, you know, my kid grew up in an orphanage in Russia till he was 12 and wasn't held for the first 5 years of his life. So, that's not going to apply to most of us. So what you want to do is ask questions that will help you, you know, in a normal situation, fill in some of the blanks of what we didn't get to. We rushed through this. We're talking about discipline tonight, next week, direction and the training. But right now, if you have a question, raise your hand and we'll get a mic in your hand. Ryan's got a mic and Elliot does. And while this one's being asked, set up the next one over here. Yeah.
So when you're the disciplinarian, you come home from work and let's say Matthew had 4 or 5 transgressions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did he get 15 swats
yep.
all in a row and then you walked him through each
yep.
one? Or
yep.
She must have had to help like try and keep it all straight in your mind of, hey, well, you get 3 swats for this, and then you got 4 more swats for that.
It was helpful that she was a 6th grade teacher, because even when they were little, there was such organization in my wife's mind, and she's great about that, to really, you know, there was infractions, there was consequences, and so, yeah. And you know what? Frankly, sometimes when I saw the escalation of it all, you know, she's not in the middle of the room of discipline. I never let him off, right? But sometimes when he racked up 22 or whatever, right? I'm going to say, you know, that was 8. That's enough, right? Don't tell your mom you got 8. But go downstairs. I make sure he cries. I make sure it's real. And then go downstairs and apologize to your mother. And then again, I think the biggest thing, especially from dad, is I'm really disappointed in you. I am not happy with this, right? Now, again, if that's all they hear from dad, not healthy. They got to hear from me that, you know, when they do well, that I praise them and encourage them. But so, you know, some days it can get ridiculous, right? But not that often. And there's some mitigation.
Well,
Dad has the latitude for a little mitigation, and she doesn't know the times that he got less than he should have gotten.
And that's fine. That's totally cool with me. I mean, he's
it?
The head. Yes.
Okay, good.
Although this is the first time he's ever said that. He's never confessed that.
I haven't confessed that.
No, but when it was first happening, I have to say, when we first, he took over Matthew's discipline, and it worked because he has the kind of job that he could do this. When it was first severe and he was laughing in my face and saying, you know, you can't hurt me, ha ha, he came home from work. He would discipline, he would leave. Now, obviously, that doesn't work in a lot of your situations, but some of you actually work at home, and there's no reason why you couldn't walk down the hall, do the discipline, go back. You know, that only had to happen a few times, so there were, you know, there were very few times that there were 22.
There was a couple extra spots for those, because I had to come home, now I'm frustrated, right?
Right.
Thinking, dude, you got five for that, you're getting seven, because I had to leave work to come and do this.
But it went down, you know, even with the strong-willed kid.
Yeah.
It goes down when they know this is what's going to happen when Dad gets home.
And that happened with Matthew a few times. I don't even remember that happening with the other two.
Oh, no. Right. It never happened with the other two.
Okay. Poor Matthew. Encourage Matthew, now that I've thrown him under the bus tonight. Matthew's a great, great kid. He's turned out, but he did get a lot of discipline as a kid. Or we're over here now, Ryan.
What were your five basic rules? You have respect authority, display self-control.
Attitude, like we didn't allow complaining.
Self-promotion, no self-promotion.
I don't think that was a rule. It was obedience, respect, loving others. You know, like you couldn't smack your brother or, you know, be mean to your sister or pull someone's hair down the street.
So you're talking like the big five.
Respect.
I couldn't tell you.
Self-control. Be kind. Obey. And what was the other one I just said that I missed?
I didn't know those were all codified like that.
Well,
that's awesome.
They are for some people. They need to be.
Yeah.
You know, and some people actually, you know, it's really good if you put a verse with each one of those, so that then your child is realizing this isn't mom and dad just being picky. This is what God expects of you. And I know one of the gals, Krista Blakey, in this room, she has the rule, and she puts the verse right on that one piece of construction paper, and like, that's the red one. And even when it's the little kids, she goes, okay, which rule did you break? And they point to the red one, and they're learning the verse about do nothing with grumbling and complaining, or whatever. So there's an attitude, and there's a verse that goes with it. So I think those were the five, but I know I missed one, but I think I said it earlier, so sorry.
I was just thinking, and you say it wasn't one of the big five, but I remember the quoting Proverbs 27:2, I don't know how many times. Let another praise you and not your own mouth, a stranger not your own lips. That principle I remember quoting, more of a subtle thing, but I can't stand the self-promotion of, you know, and from the little kids, they instantly get into that. I'm all into praising you, that's great, but let someone else do it. Nothing creates a bratty kid faster, right, than encouraging that kind of self-promoting, you know, braggy personality. So that one always struck me.
Yeah.
Whenever I would see that, even today, if I see a little bit of that come up, I say, whoa, let me recount what happened well in that game. Not that they can't recount what's good. It's just that you got to be careful when it's going into that self-promotion, right? I don't allow that. Proverbs 27:2.
Yep.
Yep. We've tried to get a lot of other people to discipline our children. And I mean that. You know, I remember, it was funny, too, because I don't know if it ever happened. I think it may have, especially with my parents. I drop off my kids to my parents. I think, Dad, you're great at this, right? Have at it, you know?
He's a big softy now.
And
yeah,
I don't know if he ever did, but certainly I would tell our grandparents that, you know, and I don't know if...
I don't think they ever did it, but we did give them permission.
And it's a bummer that they never got around to that.
But, you know, they do things like we said we were going to go for ice cream and now we're not going to go. You know, something like that. That if they did anything, it was like that. But we only did that if they were going to be gone with them over the weekend or something like that, where they were there for an extended period of time. Otherwise, when we got them back, and that was another thing we didn't get to, was we always expected them to obey whatever authority they had over them. I would ask the kids club workers every single time I picked them up, how did it go? And if they said, he didn't listen, he didn't follow the directions, he didn't get in line, we would go out to the car and we would have discipline before we went home. When we were at grandma's, if the babysitter gave us a bad report, we got them out of bed and disciplined them right then and then put them back in bed. So they were always expected to obey other authorities, and if they were at grandma's house, yes, they either had the authority or we took care of it afterwards. Definitely.
Is there a difference between boys and girls regards to discipline?
Well, disobedience is disobedience, right? But, you know, we had two boys, older boys, youngest was a daughter, is a daughter. Still is a daughter. And I think the thing about younger kids, too, I mean, I, being the youngest in my family, there's a sense in which you get pretty good at navigating around and trying to avoid the spankings. You watch your older sibling get it so much. I wasn't super successful at that, but I tried. And because our youngest is a girl, you know, she's needed a lot less corporal punishment than our boys, but you know, she's gotten it.
Yeah,
but the boys, you know, are more they're more assertive, and certainly I don't think we mentioned that it was Matthew, but Matthew was such a strong-willed kid, you know, so much of our discipline focused on him. So I mean our daughter got spankings when she needed it, but she needed it less because I think she's pretty sly.
And she acquiesced.
And she's acquiesced. She's
it depends on the
girl.
Spirit God gave right. them. Some of your girls need a lot more discipline than your boys did because
right,
your girls, manipulate the situation and the boys get it and they stop their behavior. I mean,
right.
It totally depends on what spirit they have in them. And they're disciplined the same. At our house, they're disciplined the same.
Well, yeah, right. Right. In accordance with their behavior. Yeah.
And my husband's parents are Christian, but have a totally different theology on a lot of different things, like election, for instance. How do we deal with and respond to, for example, I see it with my nieces and nephews and my mom and dad, when mom says, don't do that, and then grandma goes and gives it to her, or kind of, I don't know how to respond, or the same way would be with, like, my husband's parents, if essentially we're telling and not telling them, but they're not saved,
right.
You know, and then grandma's like, yes, you are, like God told me you were,
right.
I have a feeling.
Yeah, well, you should always expect your grandparents are not going to probably, I may have missed part of the question too, but, and so I'd be careful what I say here because I'm thinking there's a lot of grandparents here, but you're the parents. You are responsible before God. Grandparents, even the good grandparents, you know, that were great parents in terms of discipline and consequences, they lose their mind, right? when they have grandchildren. I mean, how many times have we looked at our parents and go, you never would have let me get away with that, right? And yet they let their grandkids can do no wrong. So I would expect the grandparents, you know, are not going to be playing by the same rules we are, right? I just expect that up front. And so our kids need, you know, and we do so much coaching even before we go somewhere, even when they're
That's
little with the grandparents, and we coach them. We say, hey, we know grandma's going to let you have, you know, all the candy you want, right? That's not a big deal to us. We love a lot of candy, but whatever it might be, they'll probably let you do a lot of stuff you shouldn't do. So, but you're going to have to police yourself here, and we're going to find out, and we're going to ask questions, and we always did. We had a big, full report at the end as best as we could get, and who knows how much our parents told us about our kids. But, we expect grandparents to play by different rules. But your kids are going to look to you, unless you're having your kids at your grandparents all the time.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
And we don't. I mean, we had them there as, you know, a reasonable amount, but our kids knew that they were to live by our rules, not the grandparents' rules.
So they couldn't ask for that extra thing or whatever. Then they knew, and we coached them ahead of time. But if the grandparents or someone who's caring for your child doesn't have the same philosophy of how to raise the children, then it's probably maybe time to rethink who you have taking care of your children. Because if they're there for hours and hours doing different rules, got to think that one through.
If they're learning patterns of disobedience, right, then you need to start curtailing time. I'm not saying keep your kids from your parents, you know, unless they're learning to smoke pot or something there. But you know what I'm saying? There are reasons to shut the grandparents out in extreme situations. But you may have to curtail some of that if they're learning patterns of disobedience that they bring back into your house. But usually kids are smart enough, I know mine were, they can live by that set of rules there and get whatever they, you know, can get out of the grandparents. But when they come here, they know it's a different set of rules. And we do our best to try and have them carry our rules wherever they go, you know, whatever it might be. But we're also realists and know, you know, they're probably going to get away with a lot more at grandparents' house. It's just going to be that way.
And it's temporary. I mean, you know, they're at grandma's for you're at grandma's for 2 hours. And especially with the unsaved ones, you know, our philosophy with that was always, you know, we're the only Jesus they may ever see. So we're not going to stay away from them just because we don't like necessarily everything they do. We tell our kids ahead of time, yeah, we don't like when grandma does this or says this, but we are going to be Jesus to them. And we're here temporarily, and we're here to show them what Jesus is. Not that our kids were Christians when they're little or whatever. I'm not saying that. But I'm just saying acting the way Jesus would expect. So it's a great opportunity to show them and have them see the difference.
Let's go here.
Yes. I feel in most areas I do pretty good.
Hold on a second. I need some monitor up here.
Yeah, we can't hear you.
Can you hear me?
You're fine. It's John's fault.
I'm a single mother of four girls, yeah, ranging from 13 to 7. Mm-hmm. And in most areas, and I'm a school teacher, so I find sibling rivalry is my biggest challenge. And I know in my classroom setting, I'm constantly allowing children to somewhat try to work out what's going on in their situations. I step in kind of when I need to. But for some reason, when my girls do it, I don't know how to teach them to be respectful when they're working out their differences. I don't know, you know, sometimes like with my teenager, I feel like I have to pull back, but then I also feel like she has to set an example for her sisters. But it's just that one area where it just drives me crazy. And I just don't quite know how to get a handle on it because it's difficult.
Right. Well, the ages you're talking about, number one, you're at the point where you can be training them biblically and spiritually. You can be training them verses and doing memorizing and talking about it and getting resources, which is where we're going next time. We're talking about the spiritual training of your kids. Your kids are old enough to really be trained from God's word how we're supposed to treat one another and learning verses and expecting them to apply those verses in your home. But secondarily, I would say we would discipline them if they're unkind. I mean, that was one of our five, you know. They got disciplined if they're unkind to one another, if they're insulting to one another, if they hurt one another. And I know the desire you have, number one, for peace, and number two, for them to work it out. I think maybe there are times to let them work it out, but sometimes it's just, you were unkind, here's the consequence for that. And we're all as a family going to do, you know, me and the girls, we're going to sit down and do a study on what kindness really means. And how does it look when we're kind? And when we're not kind, these are the consequences.
And I do think that if you watch your kids in different settings with different authorities, sometimes they're much more well-behaved there, like in a school classroom, than they would,
yes,
be with you. And that proves a little bit about the fact that when we're at home, even if you're a great teacher, we let our guard down, we're lax, we're a little bit more, pardon the word, but a little more lazy about enforcing things when we're at home. But if we're in the classroom, we're on top of it. And I think our kids recognize, they always press the limits, they find where the limit is, and they live right there. And so we need consistency, we need to shun the laziness and really work to be as consistent with our kids at home, right, which is a lot more hours than we would, you know, as we do in the classroom. Because, you know, some people say, oh, my kid just won't obey. But then if they're over here with this teacher or they're over here with that person in Sunday school, they do obey and they do respond. I know they can obey. It's that they don't respect you and they don't respect your leadership. And at some point, you've got to, you know, look and say, am I really being as consistent here at home as I would be in a classroom? Hmm. Last one over here.
Yeah, we got the last one for the evening and then we'll come back next week.
I'm a new Christian. My husband is not a Christian yet. And so I've started my biblical everything, you know, being on fire with that and trying to be consistent with my disciplining. I have what you would call a couple strong-willed ones. One of them, my firstborn, won't give me his butt when it's time. He's that strong. So in that instance, what do I do? Being that that would be, he's seven, and so he's at an age where I would pass it over to the husband, but he's not where I am in his walk. He doesn't know the Lord yet.
But still, I would think even your husband, if you really came with a sincere kind of Esther banquet moment where you sat down with your husband and you said, listen, I really need your support. My seven-year-old will not, you know, your seven-year-old, that's how it usually gets, right? Your seven-year-old.
Yeah.
Won't respond and you know, I just need some kind of help. Even let the, you know, husbands are fixers, we're problem solvers. Really kind of lay the problem with that sense of, can you help me in some way? And his answer may not be, a solution may not be exactly what you want, but if you can get him to feel your pain and the difficulty of what you're going through, maybe you can start to win him over. He didn't have to be a Christian to, you know, even start to feel the sense of, you know what, you're right. If my son doesn't learn to obey his mom, this is going to have consequences for him. Start to let him see the dilemma that you're facing and see if he can't get on board a little bit more with you. But yeah, if it's seven, they won't give you their butt, then I think, you know, there's certainly some lost ground in earlier years because they should know,
yeah.
You know, my seven-year-old, if he didn't give me his butt, this is going to be a whole lot worse than if you do.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you got some catching up to do with that one. And he's almost there at the age anyway where there's other things that are probably more painful for
yeah.
him in his life of deprivation, consequence, freedoms lost, games lost, dessert lost, whatever it might be, where your husband maybe even can help enforce some of that. But yeah, that's hard. But I would say really coming on a date night or at the right time and just pouring your heart out to your husband very simply, giving him the problem, seeing if he can come up with something that will help solve that and team with you a little bit. I just want to end with this verse because I know some people think, oh, are these children? God plays by different rules with kids. This is Proverbs 20, verses 10 and 11. Unequal weights and unequal measures are both alike an abomination to the Lord. Okay? In other words, if you're playing by a different set of rules when you buy something versus a different set of rules when you sell something based on the weights and measures, if that kind of cutting corners and that kind of dishonesty is an abomination to God, right? And that's how God thinks. The next verse, even a child makes himself known by his acts, whether his conduct is pure and upright. See? So God is looking at your kids. You are just a steward, a temporary overseer in your kids' lives. He wants your kids to be restrained from compromise and evil. Or the terrible words that were given to Samuel, your kids are not walking in your ways. We need to care enough and take their behavior seriously enough and respond to them with loving, careful, biblical, consistent, diligent discipline and correction. Elliot.
All right, can we thank Pastor Mike and Carla?